Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Titans podcast. We have a lot to talk about for it being mid-May, and by we I mean former Titans cornerback Denard Walker, who of course also played for the Broncos, the Vikings, and the Raiders in a distinguished NFL career. Longtime Titans beat reporter and currently at alltitans@si.com, John Glennon, and I am David Beauclair, also at alltitans.com. At SI.com. You can find our work there at SI.com/NFL/Titans. And let's get right to it. Ryan Tannehill last week had one of the more interesting, I think, press conferences of his tenure as Titans quarterback, made some headlines in kind of good and bad ways. We'll start with the fact that he talked about going to some dark places, I guess, and really taking the playoff loss to Cincinnati very hard, and he needed to use some therapy to help him sort of get past it and move forward to this season. And I'll start with you, Denard. You were on the Titans in 2000 when you guys went 13-3, had the best record in the NFL. Lost to Baltimore in your first playoff game. The year before, of course, you were on the Super Bowl team, lost in a dramatic Super Bowl to the Rams. Either one of those games particularly hard for you to deal with? And if so, what did you have to do to get through it?
Well, not until you just brought it up, David. I was actually I was over it until you started mentioning, but I tell you what, David and John, the hardest one for me was losing the Super Bowl 34, because we were so close to winning that game. And unfortunately, we lost by, when they say it's a game of inches, we lost by an inch. And what hurt so bad was, to be on when the Rams had went up, it was 16-16, and they scored that last touchdown in the fourth quarter, and Isaac Bruce made that great catch, and it was on some guy named by the name of Denard Walker. It was hard. It was hard. And then, not to mention, just to get that far into fall, that short, it hurt. And it took an offseason to get through that. It took an offseason just to let things go. And that's what Ryan is feeling right now. He's feeling the what we call residue after last year's performance in the playoffs. And that's not unusual. It's common. And he has to get over it, because if this team wants to go further next year or 2022, it's going to be in the hands of Ryan Tannehill. So again, this is not unusual for guys to go through a dark place in the offseason, especially coming off of a loss where you were the number one seed in the AFC. It's tough.
John, should Titans fans feel better about the fact that he took it so hard, or should they be a little nervous that their quarterback can't let things roll off his back as much as that, you think?
Personally, I like it. I think Titans fans should like it as well, that Ryan Tannehill cares. He is not a guy, he's had a lengthy career here. I guess one option is to say, this kind of thing happens. We'll get him next year sort of deal. That was not the case for Ryan Tannehill. He clearly, deeply cared about the loss, about his performance. And I, as a Titans fan, I think I would appreciate that in the quarterback. Number two, I like the way that he addressed it, that he said he not only relied on his circle and his support group, but as you mentioned, David, that, he went to therapy, he dealt with some of these issues because he was in such a dark place for such a long time. And third, I like it from that standpoint as well, the fact that he revealed all this as well. There's been so much talk, I think especially in recent years, about trying to get over this stigma of mental health and so forth. And trying to do more than just tough things out when you need some help. Ryan Tannehill was a guy who said, "Hey, I'm in this dark place. I need some help. I'm going to get some therapy to work my way out." And he said he kind of feels fueled, re-energized and motivated right now. So I'm pretty excited about that if I'm a Titans fan.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy, keep in mind, never even played in a playoff game until his eighth year in the league. I mean, he certainly is not in a position where he would take this for granted and say, "Oh, well, we'll be, I'll have plenty of opportunities in my career to be the number one seed and to make another run at a Super Bowl." I mean, in three short seasons here, he's played in an AFC championship game. He's been the number one seed in the AFC, still hasn't gotten to a Super Bowl. And you certainly get the sense that he knows that those opportunities are going to be running short for him as he goes deeper into this career. And those opportunities are probably going to be cut short a little bit by the fact that the Titans drafted Malik Willis in the third round. And Tannehill made big headlines last week with his comment that he doesn't consider it his job to mentor Malik Willis. And we'll go back to you, Denard. You were a veteran at one point in your career. How did you approach young guys who were there to take your job? What did you want to do in that sort of situation?
Well, David, I've been on both sides. I've been a rookie coming in 1997, and I know how veterans, especially in the olden days, they used to treat you because, what happens when I first got there, I'm not going to lie to you, it was hard because none of the veterans would talk to me. They knew I was a high draft pick coming in third round, 75th pick. And I love Steve Jackson and I love Darrell Lewis, but they had, no words of encouragement because they knew why I was there. I was there to play. They didn't bring me in there just to, work on my suntan. And so what happened was you have to understand when you're a rookie, you pay your dues. It's just the way the game is. So when I became a veteran, I realized, how it felt to be treated like an outsider. It wasn't easy. So what I would do when they drafted a young guy, let's say Dane and Sidney in 1998 or Donald Mitchell, we end up bringing in 1999. If guys asked me a question, I was always very proactive. I was transparent and like, "Listen, this is what you have to do." I was always willing to take a guy aside because I don't think that you get anywhere with kind of creating a barrier between, a young guy and an old guy. I think it's good to be a mentor, but you don't have to be a mentor, David, by, trying to point every little flaw out. And I love what Mike Tomlin said. He said, "Listen, it's not necessary for Ryan because it's not in his job description to be a mentor. He's not getting paid to mentor Malik Willis. He is getting paid to go out there and to be productive." And like I said before, the mentorship for, let's say, Malik Willis, and I don't want to keep harping, it's going to come from offensive coordinator Todd Downing. Those are the coaches, Pat O'Hara. Those are the two individuals you're going to spend the most time with, not Ryan Tannehill. Ryan's going to be just like you. He's going to be trying to absorbing as much information as he can, and he's going to try his hardest to go out there to be the best that he can be. This is not unusual. I mean, look down in Green Bay. Go back years ago. I remember playing in Green Bay. We knew that there was one player that stood out in Green Bay. That was Brett Favre. They end up drafting a young rookie out of California with this long, beautiful hair by the name of Aaron Rodgers. Brett Favre wasn't happy about the situation. You forward it 15, 16 years later, what did Green Bay go out and do? They drafted a young man by the name of Jordan Love. Aaron Rodgers wasn't happy about the situation. But you know what? It ends up galvanizing that veteran because he knows sometimes, hey, this young guy's on my tail, so I better get it going. But I don't think it's not Ryan Tannehill's responsibility to mentor Malik Willis.
John Glennon, what are some of the potential pitfalls, though, of him saying that? I think it's one thing for him to think it. It's another thing for him to come out and say it right away. Did he create some problems for himself or for this team by saying it?
I think so. Is it going to create a huge rift? No, I don't think so. But one of the issues I had with it, and David, you and I were both there for the availability in which Ryan said this. But the question he was asked never involved the word mentor. Nobody asked him about whether he would serve as a mentor. Nobody asked him, is it your job to mentor? The question was more along the lines, if I can remember, of how do you go about working with a guy, you know, in the same quarterback room and competing with him as well. So, you know, if I'm Ryan Tannehill in that situation, I'd simply say, you know, it's about the competition, but also we want to have a good room. We want to have, you know, good relations with everybody. And if, you know, if he comes to me, I'm happy to help him. But instead, he kind of went out of his way, in my opinion, to say, I'm not going to be serving as a mentor because it's not my job. Well, I agree. It's not written in your contract that you're supposed to mentor the young quarterbacks. But I do think, in your role as the quarterback, who is always considered a leader on the team, a guy who's been in the league 10 years, highest cap, figure in the league, a two-time captain on the Titans, I think mentoring should be part of what you do. And by mentoring, I believe it's going a little bit out of your way, you know, to help out somebody at the position, not only answering questions, but saying, hey, you know, Malik,
this is how you do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know, I went back, Denard, and I think you were kind of the start of a new wave of kind of veterans who maybe helped out the younger guys, because I went back and looked at some stories that I had done and others had done, and guys like Jason McCourty, Chris Hope, and then further down the line at different positions, Cameron Wake, Andre Johnson, all guys that I spoke to and said, hey, I know these guys are coming after my position, but nonetheless, you know, because guys were good to me coming up, I feel a responsibility to pass that on to some of the others. Jason McCourty in particular, he talked about Chris Hope, he talked about Cortland Finnegan, and a couple other guys that helped him out and said, yeah, I want to do the same thing. These guys were people that said to me, hey, come on, you need to get in the cold tub. Hey, come on, you need to watch extra film. You need to do this. And he wanted to pass that to the younger guys, even though there was a job competition. So from that aspect, I think Ryan Tannehill owes a little bit more than what he said.
Yeah, and he said what he said, and I'm sure he meant what he said, because Ryan Tannehill's a guy who is always, in my dealings with him, seems well-prepared for – you know, his time in front of the media. He kind of knows what's coming. He's prepared for it. He doesn't sort of shoot from the hip with what he's, mm-hmm. with what he's saying. But I do think there is an additional sort of subtext to what he was saying. And I think it's along these lines. We all know the quarterback position in the NFL is different than any other position. It's obviously so important, but it's also different the way organizations treat it. And I think what he was really trying to say in a certain way too was, look, they're going to give the kid the job whenever they want to give the kid the job, whether he's ready for it or not, whether I have helped him get ready for it or not. There's going to come a moment when they're going to say, we're giving this job to Malik Willis right now. You can go back to 2012, for example. Jake Locker was not a better quarterback than Matt Hasselbeck was at that point. But first round draft pick in 2011, sat for most of that season. Coaches decided, you know what, if this guy's going to be our quarterback of the future, let's get the future started right now. Let's put him in there. Let's go. And I think Ryan Tannehill's probably looking at it, saying the same thing's going to happen with Malik Willis. He's sort of resigned to that fact, and he's just going to have to roll with that when it comes. It could be at some point this season, even if this team gets off to a terrible start for some reason, or if Tannehill's really struggling and that's sort of the reality of the quarterback world, because that's not a position where you can say, okay, we're just going to put him in there on first downs and let him get that sort of experience, or we're just going to put him in there on running plays. I mean, you've got to be running that huddle. You have to be seeing defenses pre-snap, post-snap, doing all those sorts of things. And that's going to happen at some point. Coaches are going to decide that, that this is the time. So we'll see when that comes. Denard, you mentioned when you were a young guy that you had older guys in the room, and then you became an older guy at one point. But the Titans right now with second round draft pick Roger McCreary, you go back to last year, first round draft pick Caleb Farley, third round draft pick Elijah Molden, the year before that, second round draft pick Christian Fulton. That is a young group of highly drafted cornerbacks. Yes, you have Buster Skrine. Yes, you have Greg Maven, who has been signed back this week as some veteran guys, but can you go with four young cornerbacks kind of as at the top and let these guys sort of do their thing? Would you do that if you were a coach of this team?
Yeah, you have to. Look at last year. Most of the guys you just mentioned, you talk about Buster Skrine and Greg Maven, they were your starters in midseason because you lost a lot of your defensive backs. You talk about Elijah Molden stepping up and playing well last year. 2021. Again, it's depth. You have to have depth in this league. That's the way Titans, they finished 12-5 this past season, was depth. I mean, this was a team. I hate to use the word decimated, because when I think about decimated, I think about teams like the 49ers a few years back when they finished 6-10, when they lost 84 players. Or go back in like 2019 when Miami went 5-11. When your team is like depleted of injuries, typically your season doesn't end well. This team was the polar opposite. They finished 12-5, and it was because of players like you just mentioned, the Chris Jacksons. Those guys stepped up and played well. So now what you add in the secondary this year, you add youth, and you have two studs at the corner. So once again, I think, and then you add Roger McCreary, who most people say, hey, he's first round potential. So once again, that just strong. It makes your defense so much stronger, because we know that everything is predicated up in the front, in your trenches. You got the best trenches in the league. That front four that they have, I'm talking about the Big Jeffrey. You talk about Usain Harrell, D'Amico, all those guys, Nico, Landry, those guys, the way that they play, and if they play this way next year, watch out. This defense could be the number one defense statistically in the NFL. So once again, I love it. I love this secondary because you have youth. And when you have youth, you can do so much in the back half. So again, I think it's going to be a great year for the secondary for Tennessee.
John, do you think there's the cornerback position, is it young guys have, you know, they're fresher? Are they fresher mentally? They haven't been beat up. They play a little more. I don't want to say they gamble, but a little more fearless. What do you think? What do you think this group can be, particularly those four young guys as a quartet there?
All kinds of potential. You know, certainly when you get as many highly drafted corners in as short a time as the Titans have, you know, there's certainly potential for quite a core going forward for a number of years. Sort of my question, though, is that, you know, I'm sure one of the reasons that, you know, Roger McCreary gets picked so early, a second round draft pick, is because there are still questions about Caleb Farley. Yeah. We just don't know for sure, you know, whether he's going to come back fully from the ACL and what that'll look like in his first year back. But at the same time, what happens when all these guys are healthy, assuming that's the case? You're not playing all four. So at that point, you know, you are sitting, you know, at least one of your highly drafted cornerbacks. And I agree with Denard that, you know, depth is great and you got to have it. But again, assuming everybody's healthy, how does that rotation work? Do you automatically say Elijah's our guy in the slot because that's sort of his position, and the other three guys rotate? Or do you say, you know, I don't know enough about Roger McCreary. You know, has he played slot enough or at all so that he might, you know, have some opportunities there, and the other guys, Fulton and Farley, playing on the outside? I'm interested to see how that all pans out at the cornerback spot.
And what's really interesting to me, and we talked about it a lot in the last episode about the wide receiver contracts and what's going on at wide receiver right now, and all the big money being thrown at Tyreek Hill and Devontae Adams and so on down the line. You know, it's been a long held tenet in the NFL that, you know, you strike while you've got a quarterback on a rookie contract where you're not paying him a lot of money. If these four guys all playing on rookie contracts can cover these high priced wide receivers all over the league, I mean, what a bonus that is sort of in your roster building when you think about it, because you could have theoretically these four guys on any particular Sunday could be making less money than the one wide receiver that the number one wide receiver that they're playing against that day. And
that's Philadelphia, for instance.
Yeah. I mean, that is the sort of thing that if it pans out the way they want it, it could be a huge advantage in terms of what they can do in filling injuries and other things that they have to do during the course of the season too.
And David, can I add on?
Yeah.
Let me say this and let me kind of go back. And I try to use a little bit of history, but in 1997, I was brought in. I was a third round draft pick. In 1998, they end up going out and they drafted Samari Roll in the second round out of Florida State. And they got Danon Sidney out of University of Alabama, Birmingham. In 1999, they went out and got a great addition to our secondary and Donald Mitchell out of SMU. By 2000, we have the number one ranked secondary in the National Football League. And most of those veterans were gone. Steve Jackson was still there. He was a backup. Darrell Lewis, he went to San Diego. We still had Blaine and Marcus at the safety position. That's why you love Amani Hooken and KB while they're still there, because they can get these guys lined up. But that's not only do you have youth, that unit became the number one unit in 2000. We were the best secondary in the NFL. I see a lot of similarities with these four. You think about it, Roger McGarry, you don't know what you're going to get out of a rookie your first year. Sometimes rookies struggle. It takes time to get used to the playbook. There's going to be a lot of different things that's going to be thrown at him. But you know that you have your two studs. You got Christian, you got Caleb. You get your second round pick in 2020. You got your first round pick. We don't know if he's going to come back from ACL. We'll know that probably somewhere in the beginning of the season. But once again, you add depth, because if Caleb's not ready to go, you know that you still got what, Roger McCreary. But not only that, let me ask you, is Chris Jackson still on the roster? Talked about Chris Jackson, yeah, what he's bringing to the table, because he is the most underrated defensive back in the NFL. Every time, if you look at the last 2 years, when he's been implementing that lineup, he's been consistent. And that's what you want from a secondary. You want consistency. And this young man, you talk about Tennessee, bust a screen, UT Chattanooga, came off the streets, end up starting and was productive. That's what you want. We don't need any studs. You want production. And that's what this unit, they gave to this defense last year. They gave you production when your starters were out.
And looking at the other side of that, wide receivers, John Glennon, I'll pose this question to you. There are some interesting veteran wide receiver names still available in the free agent market. Do the Titans need to add a veteran at wide receiver right now? And if so, who are some of the names you like out there?
I kind of feel like they do. Now, I don't know if they can afford it. Certainly they can't. I don't think at this point, until that Julio Jones salary, gives them about $9 million more of cap space in June. But you look at the wide receiver core right now, Robert Woods coming off an ACL and has never played for the Titans before. Traylon Burks is obviously a rookie. So there's a chemistry situation that has to be ironed out there. And Kyle Phillips, the slot guy, is the same. So, Nick Westbrook-Ikhina right now is sort of your fallback safety guy right now in terms of experience and chemistry with Ryan Tannehill. So I think, another veteran makes sense in a lot of ways if they can afford it. some of the guys, you know, probably the biggest name out there outside of, OBJ, which I think is not in their price range, but, you know, a guy like Jarvis Landry, certainly very, very productive. Again, I wonder in terms of price, he might be too pricey for the Titans as well. He would make a lot of sense. But, you know, if you want to look at a guy maybe a little bit down the ladder in terms of price, but who might offer something, T.Y. Hilton has had some productive years, never really attained that great level that might have been forecast for him. But, you know, certainly a productive guy the Titans have seen plenty of times over the years, and who I think could contribute something to the team. I think he makes sense. And, you know, Emmanuel Sanders, guy who's 35 years old, but still very productive, you know, still getting the job done, last year in Buffalo. And, you know, one other name came to mind, but there's a lot of question marks. You know, Will Fuller, again, a guy the Titans have seen plenty of times and would offer that downfield element, that speed threat that would probably boost the Titans. But availability, such an issue with Will Fuller over the years, you know, in terms of many injuries, I think that would be a significant red flag as far as the Titans are concerned.
Denard, what about you? Anybody out there you like for this team?
Oh, man, you know what? I really want to tip you guys' feathers. I got a name for you. Okay. Y'all going to get mad at me for saying this. Y'all know where I'm going with this. What about Antonio Brown? Oh, what about that AB in Nashville? You think that Brable can pay him? Because he is productive. When he steps on the field, man, he's an explosive. He's one of the most electrifying just talents. It's just getting him right mentally. Do you think that Mike Vrabel can contain AB and bring him into Nashville and say, AB, you think you can be productive for us? You helped Tampa get a Super Bowl last year. You played great. AB, what do you think, baby?
What do you think about AB? Yeah, I mean, Mike Vrabel's big thing is guys got to love football, right? I mean, Antonio Brown has a lot going on, but I don't think anybody questions that he loves football and loves to play football.
Is not working. It's not working. You know, he has a rap. He had a little concert. He got booed out. He's not – so he needs his day job. I'm thinking, would that be a good fit? Just to sit down, talk with Mike Vrabel, just get a chance to pick his brain and see what's going on. Because when you put him on the field, I mean, he is a nightmare for defenders. I mean, he can do so much for this offense. It's just the off the field antics that has been hurting this guy. He's a first ballot Hall of Fame if he would just shut his mouth. And that's been the issue. And that's what I hate. And I just feel like if there's a coach that can contain him, put him in his place, and nobody's better than doing that than Mike Vrabel. Do you think, David, do you think, John, this could be a fit? AB in Nashville. This is not Tampa. He's not in Florida. You know, he's not going to be in Pittsburgh. A quad market in Nashville, great place to live. I keep saying to myself, God, this guy could actually be a difference maker for an organization.
You know, talent-wise, that there's obviously no doubt tremendous production over the years and would offer, you know, all kinds of good things to the Titans. You know, I don't know what he would be commanding salary these days. So, of course, that's an issue. As I said, you know, the Titans are kind of cash-strapped right now, right up against the cap. And, you know, they'll get some more in June. But, boy, I don't know. I think more than that, I think the red flags might be waving a little bit too much for me, as far as AB, because I think one thing you mentioned, Denard, in general, I agree with you that most of his issues have been off the field, but the last issue was on the field. We saw it come into play terrible. On the field when, you know, there's some dispute of whether he was asked to go in, and play injured or, you know, it's kind of unclear exactly what happened, but he said the heck with it. Not only the heck with it, but I'm taking off my shirt and I'm heading off the field doing jumping jacks.
Oh, so, my God, that was terrible.
You know, it would talk about dark places, as we did earlier with Ryan Tannehill. I have to think that was a dark place for Antonio Brown as well.
It would make for make for a much more interesting locker room and certainly give folks like us a lot more to talk about. But that is going to bring us to the end of our time today. We later this week, the NFL schedule will be released. It's we already know the Titans have a Monday night game with Buffalo, and we will get into more of that next week. But until then, for Denard Walker, John Glennon, I am David Beauclair. Thank you for listening.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.